Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. My guest today needs no introduction. Everyone knows my friend Matt Arett is one of the smartest minds out there. He can put things together from the past. He can dig into history and he can make it all make sense for us today. Thank you for joining me, my friend.
Thank you for having me back on, Mel. Always appreciate talking to you.
Oh, it's great. Because you bring so much to the table. Something particular I wanted you to come on about this week. I've talked a lot about limits of growth, the Club of Rome, the entire depopulation / climate agenda and ad nauseum. And here you wrote an amazing Substack. If anyone isn't subscribed to Matt's Substack, it's a must. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what you talked about in the Substack and how they've manipulated data and kind of convince people that something is real that isn't, that only benefits them.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah, this was originally written for Whitney Webb's website, Unlimited Hangout.
Right.
And the title of the article is, just forgot it, The Club of Rome and the Rise of the Predictive Modeling Mafia. So if anybody wants to Google that, they could find the article easily. Yeah, the idea is to just get across, like, how is it that we have been induced to accept the conditions of walking into a slaughterhouse? It's obviously not entirely forced. There's obviously a lot of manipulation that goes into it, but we live in a society unlike that of, let's say, 500 or 600 years ago, where the majority of people lived under some form of feudal lordship. Right. We didn't really have any mechanisms of democracy that would give or empower individual citizens. That wasn't a thing. There was just subjects. By and large. So there was no mechanism for the individual to exert any type of influence on the top-down policy shaping their world. Today is very different. There's been a lot of blood spilled over centuries to emancipate, or at least to provide for a degree of emancipation. The journey is not over. That does give the idea, or it's become normalized, that monarchy's hereditary powers is kind of outdated, even though there's still powerful residues of that. I live in a Commonwealth country where the queen is our head of state. Obviously, that's one blatant example. But despite that, there is still a sense that freedom and the consent of the governed is what gives authenticity and meaning to law. And so that's even something that even Canadians and people living in the Commonwealth believe. Whether it is entirely as true as the belief is another question. But the point being is we do have power over our destiny. So to get people to accept an idea of depopulation, of reducing their living standards, destroying the life of their children or their grandkids yet unborn, that is not something you can just do easily. You have to find a way of creating, or you can't just say we're going to do that. Like, hey, look, we have to protect Gaia Earth. We're overpopulated. So let's just, draw straws and see who's going to jump off the cliff, That doesn't work. People won't democratically accept that. So you have to work on the mind. And the way that this is where I think the primary battleground has been is in the domain of the battle of the mind and how constructs that define what science is, what good practice is, how the mind is permitted to think, what techniques of thinking are permitted. If you are going to have a job in universities, if you're going to be a policymaker in the UN, There's been decades and decades of efforts to corrupt that method of thinking so that you could get good people working in the IMF or the World Bank or the IPCC who are perfectly nice people. Or do they love their kids and read them bedtime stories? And do they wake up in the morning thinking about how many millions of lives are going to be sacrificed based on their computer models that they go to work and apply? No, not at all. So that this article tries to go through a bit of a historic sweep of how this rise of predictive modeling, the replacement of individual sovereign thought in order to have computer models do the thinking for us and generate consensuses that would then shape best practice, both of an elite, but also of the masses. I tried to do that with a focus on the Club of Rome as a driving force of that.
Can you explain? I've done it, but you're better at most things. So I want to. Can you explain what the Club of Rome is? It sounds like a very it's like some kind of amazing thing over there in Italy. But really, I believe the Club of Rome was a Rockefeller gathering in Italy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's an offshoot of a David Rockefeller trilateral commission or pre-trilateral commission project. David Rockefeller's estate was the domain in 1968, where these various groups were assembled around two figures who were very high level grand strategists, upper level managers for the oligarchy, named Aurelio Piché, who is a CEO of Fiat. But he was also part of, part of the inner circle of the Agnelli family. It's an older Italian family that goes back many, many centuries, probably over 1,000 or so years. And this family, you know, the leading member of the family that runs Fiat was also a director at Chase Manhattan Bank, the David Rockefeller Bank. He was also a member of the Trilateral Commission that was set up by Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and David Rockefeller in 73. But the ball was already in motion. So you have Aurelio Piché and you have Alexander King. And Alexander King is the second figure who co-founds, or at least nominally co-founds, the Club of Rome. And he was the director of scientific affairs for the OECD. And he had been in charge in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, especially at an assignment. His assignment was going into a lot of the structures that were newly created in the Cold War, like NATO, like especially the OECD, which sort of set the standards for good educational practices around the transatlantic community. Like, what is good practice for teaching children, right? Because there's a dispute. There's not like one single pathway. There's a lot of disputes about, well, how do you, what's the philosophy of teaching? Do you treat kids like they're machines that you could just input data into to get good behavior using reward and punishment? That's what some oligarchs think, and that's what he thinks. So that was part of his assignment there. And part of that component was finding new ways of reviving the outcomes of eugenics without calling it eugenics. So eugenics was the pseudoscience of population management, weeding out the unfit genetic stock in order for the more fit superhumans to breed, and the unfit would not be allowed to breed or would be euthanized, as we saw this applied all across North America before World War II. But we saw it really applied vigorously in Germany under the Nazis. And the funding for this came from things, not coincidentally, like the Rockefeller Foundation, which was the primary backer and the funder of the eugenic science, pouring millions of dollars into universities to treat this garbage like it was a real science. So people were getting brainwashed in the medical community, but even across the board. There are other foundations too participating, who are all sort of working on behalf of the same oligarchical agencies from the 1907 period onward. So that the Nazis gave eugenics a bad name. People saw the ugliness of what this actually looked like with the Tiergarten 4 euthanasia programs that killed, 200 plus thousand Germans who were unfit to live because they weren't cost effective.
Right.
Before even branching out to other ethnicities and groups, as we know. But then again, so people were horrified. But those who were at the top managing the eugenic science as the new sort of transhuman, this is before transhumanism, it was essentially transhumanist, because who was going to be the decider of which genetic stocks are deemed fit or unfit? It would be a self-professed superhuman grouping of a higher order that would make those decisions for the undermentioned, the untermentioned, the lower humans, right?
Right.
So Alexander King was selected as a good sociopath who had all of the right stuff. And he brought in what was created as a mode of thinking deemed after World War II, it was constructed, called cybernetics, which in short simply means a science of control that was based upon an assumption that all things are systems, whether a human is a system, many humans were in a community can be thought of as a system, a city or a nation can be thought of as a system, or all of humanity can be thought of as a system, just like the biosphere can be a system, a leaf can be a system. Basically, a system is just a one with many parts that work together for an outcome. And that's pretty much everything that exists, right? So it's a way of thinking about wholes, a science of thinking about wholes. And you're like, well, that sounds reasonable. Like, we should be able to think about a whole and how parts play a role into a whole. But the question is, do you think that the whole, here's the big debate, is the whole do you define it as the sum of its parts, like a computer is the sum of the parts within the computer? Or is it more than the sum of its parts? Like me and you as living things definitely more than the sum of our parts. Because if you cut off our arms, we're still Mel and Matt, right? So, and if for, you know, when the day comes where where the life force is not there and we're dead, that body is no longer Mel and Matt. That's the corpse, right? So there's something that is missing. That is the identity, which is more than the multiple infinitely divisible parts. Now, if you're somebody like Alexander King or Julian Huxley, or any of these oligarchs like that the Rockefellers are trained into, they don't believe that. They are religiously committed to the idea that all systems are like computers, are machines, which are just the sum of parts. There's no transcendental principle of the soul, of God, of freedom. That doesn't exist because you cannot see it, taste it, smell it, touch it. And so because you cannot do that, it does not exist. And that's why they like their computer models. So computer modeling became really popular, or became something that a lot of resources were put into after World War II, cybernetics. And again, the idea was, and the figure who founded this so-called science was Norbert Wiener. It was the idea that, you know, all parts don't need to know what the parts are doing. If you have a bureau, you can basically take any government system like the UN or NATO or the IMF, and you could hyper complexify it so that each department, and you'd make sub-departments and sub-departments within the sub-departments, so that the right hand and the left hand don't know what they're doing. And the only grouping that is required to see the whole is the nerve center, the brain center, an executive branch, maybe, you know, a small grouping of initiates are allowed to see the whole. So it became a really perfect, ideal type of science for managing an oligarchical system where most people participating don't know what they're doing in the machine. And so Alexander King and Pache, getting back to them, they were at a moment, 1968 was a big moment where a lot of work had been done to kill anti-Malthusian. So all of the different statesmen and people working even in academia during the Cold War. And I'm talking about people like John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Charles de Gaulle in France was fighting this thing. So you had a network of statesmen around, especially the transatlantic, who were resisting the idea that we should mechanize governance and bring about a science of scarcity. They were all of the view that, no, we can always overcome the limits to growth. That is the mandate of nations. We all have a soul. We can treat people like they have a soul, and we can always make discoveries and apply them to have more abundance. We don't have to ever constrain ourselves by adapting to scarcity. So they, you know, there was a lot of effort to artificially kill a lot of these leading statesmen, as we know. There was a lot of effort to purge people from academia who thought this way, because they were just labeled red commies, Russian lovers or something, and they were just purged from academia. They lost their careers and not given a voice. There was still some media at the time that was doing a good job, but it was even there, obviously, getting crushed under Project Mockingbird from the CIA that was installing CIA operatives to get, you know, bring about a certain permitted messaging. So the Club of Rome was assigned at a certain moment when the stage was set with the murders of a lot of great people. There was a certain vacuum. And so David Rockefeller at his estate in Europe commissioned the creation of this organization, which would be a part of they needed to give scientific legitimacy, a veneer of science to this idea of a science of scarcity, because you couldn't just tell people who believed, who had an optimism in human beings, and who there was a general cultural love or an appreciation for the respect of the sacredness of life still. Despite the corruption of society, that was still a thing. There was a scientific optimism that we could always go to the moon. We could always go beyond our limits, as JFK had put us on that mission. We could always tap into the atom to overcome scarcity. So to get over that, or to try to convince people that that is wrong was not easy to do. And these Malthusians, and we'll call them, they were self-professed Malthusians, these eugenicists under a new name.
Right.
They were devotees of the theories of Thomas Malthus. For those who might need a reminder, Thomas Malthus was a British Empire economist, a nominally a man of the church, who promoted this idea that you could scientifically use math to manage global populations, whether in India or Ireland or anywhere, based on this assumption that population always growed geometrically and food only could grow arithmetically. And based on that, different rates of growth, you could forecast in a linear extrapolation when the population would exceed the means to support them and make your preventative actions in the present to kill excess useless eaters today to avoid a crisis in the future. So this is obviously, you know, sound familiar, right?
Yeah.
This is basically what they repackaged. And so they said, okay, well, Malthus's theories were kind of primitive. He didn't use a lot of variables. He didn't have computers. We do now. So they basically poured money into things like the MIT. Basically, there were a grouping of young computer programmers at MIT, Dennis Meadows, Forrester being another one, Danella Meadows, were sort of just fronts. I mean, I don't think that they were even participating in the creation of the programs themselves, honestly, that were assigned to come up with computer models that could process more data than any single human mind could ever contemplate. So you just input maybe 30 or 40 different variables like pollution rates of increase, population increase, the reduction of available food space, a variety of things. And you could just chart out, and what their models basically came out as a result was that by the year 2000, we'd all be dead. We'd all be like hell on earth, right? And that was also where the idea of associating industrial growth and pollution and temperature, they said, oh, we could make industrial growth, agro-industrial growth and temperature become associated. And the variable that they ended up selecting was carbon dioxide, which is an emission from agro-industrial activity. You produce carbon whenever you burn things, whenever you breathe things, you know, whenever you have more cows, that's more breath, that's more carbon dioxide, more humans, more, you know. And then they called it pollution, and they just said it's pollution. It's part of the big thing we call pollution, totally underdefined. And then they said, okay, now see, we've scientifically proven it. All of the doubters who thought that we were just like doomsayers, ideologically trying to revive Malthus with no science, they're all wrong, because our computer models, that's science. Right. And so they just basically used repetition and intimidation. They were given a platform at the World Economic Forum under Klaus Schwab, which was right, in 1973, sponsored by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who had only 15 years earlier founded the Bilderberger Group. Mm-hmm. So, and after founding the Bilderberger Group, keep in mind, what did Prince Bernhard do? Well, he teamed up with Prince Philip Mountbatten to create, along with Julian Huxley, the president of the Eugenic Society of Britain in 1961. Still, no shame, right? They created the World Wildlife Fund for Nature, right? With a specific manifesto, basically, that outlined how human beings are the source of our problems. It's not imperialism or hunger or ignorance that's the source of humanity's problems, because every time we try to solve the problem of ignorance and we make people smart, or we try to solve the problem of famines by providing more food, or we try to solve any of these problems by using technological creativity and progress, we create more problems. Because all of a sudden now you have too many people, which puts pressure on the environment, right? You solve malaria, now you have overpopulation, they created a whole science. All of these people like Aurelio Peche and King and all of these freaks, they created another science called world problematic. And world problematic is just the science of thinking about world problems and not to solve problems. Most science is supposed to be about solving problems, whereas their fake science was about it's the science of thinking about how solving problems causes problems.
Now, you have to admit, these people are brilliant. These are not dumb people. And what's so interesting that you're saying is, honestly, I think a lot of people saw it, but it's just absolutely true. One time Bill Gates on one of his, you know, broadcasts, he was talking, he was recommending books, and he recommended How to Lie with Statistics. And this is like 4 years ago. And yeah, people can look it up. I think that this, it probably got wiped, but it really, he's saying that this was a great book. And it's what you're saying. It's, and what we're dealing with now, you know, you bring up the eugenics and all of that. People, there are people that don't know, that aren't educated in this, that that don't know that the only thing they're looking at is human caused everything. So like with the World Wildlife Fund, which I once went to an event for them in New York when I was a kid, I thought it was a great thing. I didn't realize that what they were saying was that it was humans that were the problem. And then with the climate thing, it's humans. And with this, it's humans. And at the end of the day, what people don't understand is they're only looking at humans. It's like totally, it can't be, they're not looking at anything else. Like, so there was like a, in Hawaii, there was a volcano explosion. Well, there goes all your CO2, your CO2 stuff. It's, they're only looking at humans, A, and B, the scarcity is caused by them. So you, what you're saying, you know, with all these groups, Club of Rome, IPCC, but World Economic Forum, all of them, they take something and then they exaggerate it. And then they sell it because they do go into the universities and they have these people do these models, because we found the same thing happened with COVID. Remember, I can't remember the guy's name in that started the whole thing at the Imperial College, but he came out with all these graphs and charts. And Fauci and Birx kept citing them. Well, a year later, we find out that he was using all like manipulated data and all that to scare humanity. This is a constant thing. And yet the people aren't understanding that it's not that what they're really saying is the concentration of power needs to be with them. You also wrote a little bit. We talked about it last week. COP27, they have a new 10 commandments to honor the world, the earth over, you know, God and humanity. And again, it's the same thing. They're hoping, because they've gotten away with it for so long, that people will buy into it. I think that it's breaking, especially because of work like yours and others. But again, it's the same concept of it's all humanity. And if you give all your money and everything to us, meaning the globalist elite oligarchy, we'll fix it. When really they're the ones causing the problem, other besides nature and, you know, volcanoes and tornadoes and atmospheric pressure and all that other stuff they ignore. But, you know, that seems to be just a reoccurring theme.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And actually, as you're speaking, I pulled up a quote by Alexander King from 1991, just so people have a feel for how this guy is slimy and how he's thinking. And it's exactly what you said. So in 1991, there was a book called On the First Global Revolution, going through an autobiography of the Club of Rome's first 20 years. And he writes in on page 118, people can read this on archive.org online. It's a good resource.
Yeah.
In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. All of these dangers are caused by human intervention, and it is only through changed attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy, then, is humanity itself.
Right.
So, I mean, he's very, very clear of where he sees the real problem. And you could, and I mean, I litter my article with this garbage, because there's a variety of quotes from these freaks who all basically say in their own words that they're in their own times, the exact same thing, that human beings are the cancer, we're talking about John Holdren saying something similar about the idea that fusion energy, right when you had a lot of hype and hope that fusion, cold fusion might have been discovered in 1991 by Pons and Fleischmann, two great scientists who have been highly slandered. They basically demonstrated that room temperature circumstances could be induced to create a cold fusion. John Holdren comes out, who had written a book with Paul Ehrlich earlier. Oh, no, Paul Ehrlich, who's the mentor of John Holdren, who becomes Obama's science czar.
Oh, God, I've read stuff about that guy. We could do a whole show on him.
Yeah, he's disgusting as hell.
Oh, my God. People don't even know. I just recently found all this stuff by him, because at the time I was young, I didn't care. Oh, my. He was behind all of this.
Yeah. Well, he was a big player, very unapologetic about what he was into. And they like people who can kind of get giddy over the idea of bloodletting innocent lives in the billions. They like those sorts of people. And if you could exhibit that you're authentically happy to preside over killing people, you can get easy access to a lot of clubs. And so they liked Paul Ehrlich for that. And Paul Ehrlich said that fusion energy would be like giving a machine gun to an idiot child. If that would be, that's his view of
that's the equation.
Huh?
That's what he equates. Okay.
Yeah, that's what he gets to you added. So all of these guys, yeah, like what they're really doing, and you brought up the global warming thing. It's really important for people to internalize. And I think a lot of people have come to realize that they were duped on global warming. That that the same techniques and the same method of bad reasoning, computer model thinking that was used to sell us COVID as a response by folks at Imperial College, funded by the Gates Foundation. Gates, like, exactly. People like Neil Ferguson was the guy who had to sort of resign for having, like, you know, cheated on his wife or something with a married woman during COVID lockdown. But, you know, that was just a public scandal for the tabloids. The real thing that should have been the real thing is that he was a devout liar who was utilizing fake, like these fake codes that he created that would always generate horrendously dramatic results. And he was doing this for the foot and mouth disease originally in the year 2001, where he used his modeling at Imperial to forecast that there'd be like 150,000 deaths unless, this is 2001, unless we killed 11 million cattle and sheep across Britain, which they did. And he got an order of the British Empire as a reward for the first time, you know, basically using a medical emergency to create food scarcity. They're like, this works.
We can keep working with that. Yeah. Let's keep making it better.
Yeah. And his star just kept rising. And he created all of the models that were used to predict the bird flu, with these like 150 million people would be dead unless we do all of these drastic things. Oh, 280 people died in reality, and nothing was even close to the truth. He did the same thing with the swine flu. His models were way off. And yet each time he is promoted to become the head medical advisor and code programmer for World Health Organization. You went everywhere. So you're like, who's really protecting this guy? And so when it came out, as you said, you know, like that 2 million Americans and 500,000 Brits would be dead by COVID-19 unless we did a complete lockdown and shut down the economy. It was him. It was his code. And indeed, when people finally looked at his code, because he fought to not allow it to be released, and he finally provided a redacted version of his code to be made public for other programmers to look at. And everyone who was professional looked at this and said, this is disastrous. Every single thing, like, you can't work with this. First of all, they made 15,000 lines of unintelligible, like one giant code of 15,000 lines, which is bad practice. And they basically, it's shoddy as sin. And it utilizes the cover of certain techniques like the Monte Carlo analysis that I go through in the paper. But the Monte Carlo analysis is just a way of, it's basically, the word comes from the Monte Carlo casino. It was generated by information theorists in the 1950s who were working with Wiener, the creator of cybernetics, basically in order to say, okay, the rolling of the dice at the Monte Carlo casino in Morocco, that's a good model for trying to measure everything that exists in the universe. Because they're like, it's all just random anyway, isn't it? So dice rolling is perfect. You know, so they're like, they called it that. And the idea was to create stochastic. Well, that's a complicated way of just saying random. So random functions that would try to give off like an unprejudiced result of just, you know, just splattering of paint or whatever. That would be embedded in all programs that we would use to forecast what the future would be in everything. Now, the reality is that, first of all, the universe is actually organized according to coherent laws and reason and order and beauty and symmetry. And that's not true. But the other thing is that having this belief that this is a responsible best practice using random Monte Carlo analysis, whether for predicting the future trends of weather or economic activity, like what's the economy going to be in a year or 2 years or whatever. It's a good cover for hiding lies, because it's like this wall of complexity, because the mind can't know random. The mind is not random. So the mind can only know that which is like the mind. And if the mind is reasonable, we are made in the image of God. So unless you believe that God is irrational, right, and is just a gambler who just got too drunk or whatever and just made this mess called the universe after a big bang or something.
Right.
I mean, if you believe that the universe is organized according to the intentions and design of a creator, and we are part of that universe, and thus we express those intentions and designs of the creator when we use our mind well, and we don't when we don't use our mind well, then you can only know in your mind that which is like your mind. And if you assume that the universe, there's these walls of complexity and randomness, well, you can't trespass beyond that. You might as well just think about little things you can handle, like making your sandwich, paying your bills, getting a job, being successful. All of the bigger things that are beyond the wall of complexity, that electric fence, you can't think about. So that's good for them, because then they could throw in or include in their computer models deceitful programs that will always bear the same results as, again, with the case of Neil Ferguson or with Michael Mann and the Al Gore computer models promoted by the IPCC, they all use Monte Carlo as a cover. And the reality, as has been done, is that any of the data sets you put, regardless of the data of reality that you include into those inputs, into the computer models for global warming or COVID, it would always result in the same geometric increases of heat and temperature. It doesn't matter what it is, or increased rates of pandemic deaths. They're designed to do that so that the result is, oh my God, like Malthus said, by 1900, we're going to have over a billion people on the earth and we'll all be dead. Or maybe I think he said 2 billion.
Yeah.
And we have to act now to kill off the excess eaters. And he gives prescriptions on how. Same thing, preventative actions that will shut down fertilizer use, industrial output, energies that would allow you to sustain more life. And instead, and again, I go through some of the quotes of these Club of Rome fanatics who said, they acknowledge that the human spirit always yearns for improvement. They acknowledge that. And I got a guy in there named Maurice Lamontagne, who's a co-founder of the Canadian Club of Rome and the former president of the Privy Council. He's part of Pierre Elliott Trudeau's inner circle.
He's in all the special groups.
Yeah, very. And he was the one who was presiding over the reform of all science policy and funding in Canada, and also educational practice. He did that, and he was working very closely with Maurice Strong. And he says in his Canadian science policy report for the Senate, as he was a senator, he says, "Well, we cannot stop man's creativeness. Man will always aspire to improve his conditions or improve his understanding. So all what we can do is promote ways of conducting science that diminish his impact on the environment, so that channel his creative energy in such a way that the effects of certain acceptable types of creativity will be to reduce our, rather than increase our impact on nature. So what would that be?" And it's like, well, look at the types of creative technologies that are permitted and given subsidies in our current society, like windmills, solar panels, entertainment. I mean, look at the video game sector and Netflix. Right. This is all where they're allowing creative science is in these domains that make us dumber, more lethargic. I mean, pharmaceuticals, CRISPRs. I mean, they're legalizing drugs galore. There's a lot of so-called science behind these things. And that's okay. That's the okay science. And windmills and solar panels, that's fine too. Because if you have a society which makes itself dependent upon the energy that is gotten from windmills and solar panels, well, that's a society that is going from like a belt, like a 40-inch belt down to a 6-inch belt. And it'll break your back. And it's designed to shut down your society's ability to sustain its people. So that's what they want, is that effect. And what they don't want are the bad practices of science, like nuclear science, the closing of the fuel cycle that would allow us to recycle all of our nuclear waste instead of burying it, which we were on the cusp of doing in the 70s. And they cut the kneecaps off of this organic process where we had closed the fuel cycle. Jimmy Carter, under the Trilateral Commission of James Schlesinger, who is, again, a Rand Corporation Trilateral Commission Malthusian freak, sabotaged the development of fusion power, the closing of the fuel cycle, and all of these things. They sabotaged the Apollo space program. So they canceled Apollo by 1973, saying, we don't need to think about outer space like JFK was trying to get us to think. We need to think about our inner space. And basically this made people increasingly right. selfish. We're going into a consumer society, so we all have to think about me and my feelings more and explore our inner feelings as that inner universe. Don't worry about what's going on Mars and Venus and Saturn and beyond and comets and other things. And it's like, well, the reason why we became dumb enough to accept global warming is because we became so Earth-centric in our obsession. We lost the ability to measure all of the behavior of the solar system. So we're not even paying attention to the globe, to the so-called global warming happening on Mars or Venus or Jupiter or the 64 moons of Jupiter, which all have climate change,
yeah,
according to functions that have a lot more to do with the sun than SUVs on Mars.
Right. But that's what I keep trying to tell people. The people that created this myth, this control mechanism, the whole thing, they're not bringing in anything other than what they're saying. It's all humans. This is all about controlling human behavior, controlling all of that. It's a great thing you're talking about because I've been saying it a lot. I know you do too. There's so much ingenuity, possibilities, creativity that has been stifled and silenced. And, you know, like you said, entertainment, I used to be in entertainment, but certainly with from on every level. But this was part of the plan. If you go back and you look at even like Alice Bailey's writings for, you know, the UN and the Lucis Trust, you're going to see that's part of the plan. Or like what you're bringing up is similar to Kissinger, where he said that if you control the oil, you control the country. If you control the food, you control the people. And everything that they're doing with the modeling and with the stifling of people's creativity and ingenuity and, you know, engineering and you know, people searching for other things out there that are not sanctioned by the UN or the World Economic Forum and the overlords, or, you know, like you said, the DOD grants, all the grants that are given out, they're not investing in creativity and ingenuity and other options. There are so many, but they get stifled. And I mean, it just seems like that's a continuous process all the way back to where you started the article to right now. And I think people are starting to wake up, but people have to really understand that they are being, I keep saying to people, there's so much propaganda. If you understand propaganda and mind control and the manipulation of data and thoughts and everything, and then you can see it, which is why you're so good at what you do, because you unravel it to a place where people say, oh, what, really? That's interesting. Because now we have the situation where we are, you know, I think we're at I hate to use the word, a lot of people use it too much, the precipice of, you know, we have to make a choice as humanity. They are not giving up. A lot of people are saying they're so arrogant right now. They did like 5 conferences we talked about last week in a row about how they run the world and just shut up and be happy wherever you are. We'll take care of it. And yeah. now people have to make a move. What are your thoughts in going forward? Your conclusion of what we need to do?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, the important thing is to always think for when thinking in the unknown, like when leaping out of the known into the unknown, which is what all babies do, right? When they learn to walk or talk or anything, they're always leaping outside of the known comfort zone into the unknown and discovering new capacities, new skills. And that's part of being human. That's a good thing. That should never stop. But part of the thing is what makes it work so efficiently for babies is they don't have a lot of baggage of prejudices, intellectual thoughts that give them a sense that they know things they don't know. They have a natural sense of wonder in the universe, a natural humility, which is great. And so being able to rekindle, we can never get back to that, and we shouldn't, right? We should be proud of our accomplishments. So we shouldn't have like that purity of a baby in that sense, but we should be able to still tap into that spark of wonder and be humble enough to be aware that, okay, did I earn this opinion? Where did this conviction come from? Where did this prejudice come from? You know, and that's an important thing to do. So to reserve judgment, weigh all of the data possible, always look for, well, what is the intention behind the surface of this information or this information, even if it's coming from a trusted news source. I think that's always very important to do. And so you're always looking for the simple causal principles behind the surface appearance of things, rather than some pattern formation, which is what a computer does. Computers are induced to say, okay, well, there's a pattern here. We've associated that pattern with this meaning. And anytime we see a similar pattern, we're going to have that same meaning triggered. And thus two people could say similar words but with very different intentions that are invisible, and intention cannot be seen or heard.
Right.
And because we're not looking for their intentions, we'll simply say, oh, Barack Obama sounds very similar to Martin Luther King Jr. And they use similar words of the well-being of the whole and all these nice things that, and they're the same thing. And whether that means you like them both or that means you hate them both, it doesn't matter. The point is you've just thought in a stupid way. So I think the important thing is to always look for intentions, triangulate that. And I would say today, the biggest point, Achilles heel of this oligarchy, is that human beings begin to realize that we are made in the image of God, and that the nations and the laws that organize society are not intrinsically bounded by any limits. We're only limited by our own lack of imagination and our own moral convictions to do better. So to the degree that we limit ourselves based on our lack of imagination, which is often encouraged by video games, bad cultural practices, bad entertainment that enforces an idea that the future is just a dystopic hell anyway. So why look to the future with optimism? Just live in the now. There's a variety of techniques to do that. The point is, to the degree that we overcome that and we think like John F. Kennedy, we think like Abraham Lincoln, who didn't believe in any limits to growth, we can better see what are the workable pathways out of this. Donald Trump, criticize him as much as people might want to do, he did have an instinct for that. I could hear it in his Davos speech in 2020. I could see it in a lot of his policies, where, you know, the Davos speech where he famously said, he basically called out Malthus as a bullshitter,
right,
and said, you know, we need to revive the Renaissance traditions of what made Italy this beautiful place. He was speaking in Italy, and go back to that spirit in the 21st century. That's the right way of thinking. And he was doing that in conjunction with other leaders,
right,
especially in Eurasia, who have been slandered by our media, both mainstream and non-mainstream, to get us to think that all of the powers of Russia and China are actually our enemies, and they want to all destroy us, and they are at the heart of the Great Reset. That's not true. If you look at what they're doing in Eurasia right now, they're putting online a mode of thinking which is much more incoherent. When you look at their energy policy, their science policy, their nuclear policy, their large-scale infrastructure water policies, they're creating a process utilizing, especially in China, where there is national banks that they didn't permit to be privatized by the overlords in the City of London and right, the Bank of England, and like we have, and they kicked out George Soros. They have state banks like we used to have in the West. They have it still. They have Glass-Steagall separation. You go to jail for speculating with people's savings. And they're investing, that they're using these tools to invest in the biggest projects we've ever seen in human history that are very reflective of the sorts of things that people like John F. Kennedy or Franklin Roosevelt or Lincoln were doing. And they're overcoming limits to growth. So when they say in Eurasia, fourth industrial revolution, they're meaning a very different set of technologies than we are using here. It involves, yes, 3D printing and quantum computing and machine learning, but it also is driven by industrial productivity, nuclear power, fusion energy, space. They're building a moon, a Russia-China moon base. They invited the United States and the West to join them, saying, let's do this together. And instead, all they're getting in response is, you know, military, like missiles all around their border, CIA color revolutions, and bio warfare, which is being sprung up, which is how Russia and China are both have been reacting. The leadership of those countries are treating the COVID thing as if it is a bioterror attack, either now or in some seeding. But they're on World War III footing right now.
Right.
And they know that ethnically targeted bioterror operations have been developed for over 30, 40 years, especially after 9/11. It got really bad. And it's outlined. And there's 320 plus opaque U.S. biolabs internationally, all around Russia's perimeter in Georgia. We know Hunter Biden played a role in the Ukrainian operations. Obama played a role in setting up the Georgian operations.
Oh, yes, he did.
We've got them in South Korea. We've got them all over Asia. And this is what the Asians and the Russians are freaked out about. And this is, they don't want to sacrifice their people on an altar. If we want to overcome these predictive models, we need to activate nonlinear human, beautiful creative reason in people that will naturally, we are the problem solving species. We don't have to go to World War III. We don't have to shut down civilization. We can solve problems. We can solve asteroid, you know, asteroids are going to eventually hit the Earth again, as they have, you know, resulting in 99.9% of all species that have ever existed being dead now. Dinosaurs couldn't have a NASA. They couldn't come up with these things. Their brains were that big. So humans can do all of these things, which are part of, I think, God's ultimate design for us. And if we have an existential chance here, we have the power of the atom at our disposal. We can do it for self-annihilation, or we can apply it for self, for creation in beautiful ways. And I think people just have to internalize that. Think about what Trump was doing. Think about what Russia is doing objectively. Get out of mainstream or even alt media spin masters and just look at what the policies are, what these leaders are saying, what the battle is. And then we'll have an honest dialogue about how we can best do that in Canada, in the United States, in Europe, to free ourselves from this death cult. So I would just say, I would end it that way.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, you're the best at putting it all together. And that's the truth. We have unlimited possibility. We have tons of technology and all kinds of things that we haven't put to use that we can to rebuild both your country and mine. And I believe that's in the future. I believe God wins here, and I see it every day. So thank you so much, Matt Arett, again, and I will see you soon. You're the best. You can go follow Matt Arett at Substack. Where else are you?
CanadianPatriot.org and RisingTideFoundation.net.
Yes, please go follow him. Him and his wife do great seminars, all kinds of learning. It's like going back to college for real. So enjoy. Thank you so much, Matt Arett.
Thanks. Bye, Mel.
Bye. Hi, guys. Mel Kay here. I'm very excited to be here with my partners at My Daily Choice because we are super excited about our CBD line. It keeps growing. I am a big fan of these patriots that are out there. They are producing this in America. They ship it from America. It is totally pure. It is the best I've found. After the last 2 years, guys, of the medical industrial complex and us watching this unfold, we have to realize that natural remedies, things that come from God, are actually the best medicine. What are you guys finding out there from people that respond to you and from how you're using it and what it's doing for your life?
Well, it's changed our lives in a lot of ways. For her, sleep is one thing, mood, overall general health, just so many things. But the reason that works that way is because we all have an endocannabinoid system, which none of us were taught. No. I wasn't taught it in grad school. And it's there to give us homeostasis or balance in our bodies. It controls the other 10 body systems. Wow. So no wonder none of us felt too good, you know? So we hear all kinds of stories all every day about what it's doing for people.
Yeah, and for me especially, I too, it's great for me for sleep, but also for mood, for kind of staying even keel with energy all day without the ups and downs. And I know I also have had many experiences with different products that you have. The coffee is great. There's a makeup line. I mean, this is an amazing product, and I really want everyone to go check it out. You can go to the partners page at the Mel Kay Show, and you can see the link to My Daily Choice. And we are very excited to get our health back, to go into this next phase of the awakening, and have some great products to use while we're getting on our A game to go back into the summer. So thank you so much, guys, and I will see you next time. And everyone, please go check out the Mel Kay Show at Partners and find the My Daily Choice tab and go check out all the products. There's so many products, you won't even believe it. I really appreciate it. I'll see you guys next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hello, Patriot Pals. I am here again to talk to you about something that's concerning me, and it might be concerning you. This is something all of us are starting to feel on the front lines, which is the controlled demolition of the U.S. dollar and our economy. Right now, if you go to the supermarket or you go fill up your car or just your day-to-day expenses, we are seeing an average of $6,000 in bigger costs across the board for each American family at this point. Our 401ks and our pensions are being decimated, and there seems to be no end in sight, at least not right now, because we are at an 8% inflation rate, and that does not seem to be the end of it. And that is a 40-year high. So we've never really seen anything like this in our lifetimes. What we've seen in 2021 and 2022 with the Federal Reserve and the printing of cash is an influx where 40% of the US dollars out there have been printed in the last 2 years, devaluing our dollar dramatically. The rest of the world right now is strongly considering returning back to the gold standard and leaving the reserve currency of the US dollar behind. This has been a result of the sanctions in Russia and other sanctions by our government on foreign countries that no longer trust the US dollar.
And I think the best thing we can do is A, know that we have to weather this storm. We have a financial storm brewing. We are going to get through it. America will prevail. But in the meantime, I really am suggesting, as I am doing myself, to protect your savings, protect your 401ks and IRAs. And the great way to do that for me is gold and silver. I've been working with Beverly Hills Precious Metals for a little over 2 years. They've been really great with me and my family and friends. They have experts in different fields and different avenues. And if you go to our partners page and you go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals, you will find a real person who knows exactly what can be done to help you in whatever circumstance you're in, wherever you find yourself. They will meet you there. They will help you come up with a plan. You can have your gold and silver delivered to you. They also have a depository that's insured that you can have your gold and silver there for you. And in the end, I do believe that America will succeed and we will rise again. And this country will return to the greatness and the beauty that we know and love. But in the meantime, we have a storm ahead. It's very uncertain. To learn more, please go to the Mel Kay Show Partners page and find Beverly Hills Precious Metals and contact the experts there to find the best path for you and your family to protect your savings and to prepare for whatever's ahead. God bless you. God bless America. And please take care of your family first.
Hey, Patriot pals, Rob Reilly here. One of the most important things Mel and I do in this war between good and evil is traveling the country, meeting fellow patriots like yourselves. We share stories, resources, gain new tools, make new friends, and get activated to take back our freedom for God and country. Go to themelkayshow.com events and come join us. You will have an amazing experience and be reinvigorated to stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As always, God wins. See you there.